Welcome to Forever Bristol City podcast, and we are reviewing a result that none of us really expected based on the preceding two performances. We are reviewing a fantastic, that's no other word to describe it, performance at the London Stadium on Sunday, where it finished West Ham 1, Bristol City 1. We all saw the game. Joining me are Mark and Ian. Ian had the pleasure of watching Corp Hospitality as a guest of some Hammers fans, so he can tell us all about that as a separate piece in there. But I'll start with you first, Mark. What were your thoughts on the final whistle? I mean, it was tremendous. It was one of those unforgettable days if you're a Bristol City fan, wasn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was outstanding for a number of reasons. West Ham pricing the tickets at £10. A full stadium, 62,500, is an absolute dream for our players to play in. And after a poor start, bad bit of defensive play and a quality ball from Paqueta, they fell behind, but they didn't wilt. They matched West Ham stride for stride with outstanding performances from Max O'Leary, Cam Pring, Joe Williams again, and Tommy Conway in his finish. Went toe-to-toe with a top-six side in the Premier League and came away with a more than deserved result. It was a great game of football, end-to-end. West Ham lulled us into a real sense of security by picking a strong side. We picked our strongest side too, but it was a great advert for the FA Cup, which has got a really bad press in the last few years, because I mean there's a lot of Premier League teams who don't pay it the proper respect it deserves. West Ham did, and that's why they got an excellent game and a good result. And you know, we're back at Ashton Gate next Tuesday, tomorrow week in a replay before a full house. West Ham will have a few injuries, and we've got a chance of getting through to the fourth round.
Well, we certainly have, and as we're recording this, we don't quite know who that will be against.
Ball number six, we are, I understand, David.
Ball number six, and Rovers are ball number seven, or it's five and six. But I've got a sneaky feeling it's going to read Bristol City or West Ham versus Bristol Rovers or Norwich.
Obviously, we got bigger balls than them.
Anyway, Ian, you watched it right on the halfway line rather than an end. You were guests of people who are West Ham regulars, and they were very complimentary about us. So tell us about that and your thoughts as you walked out of the ground, head held high and chest feeling really positive on the day. Unusual for us, it has to be said.
Yeah, I didn't have one negative conversation with a West Ham fan. In fact, I did have one conversation which was quite amusing at half time, because I was talking about how well Jared Bowen was playing. Because at the start of the game, he was playing in the middle, and that's when he cut through our defence and caused that problem. Brilliant ball from Paqueta. What a player he is. And I was so glad to see him go off. I could have kissed somebody. But just to add, there was a couple of, I had one conversation, a bit physical, your lot, aren't they? And I said, if you'd have seen us last week against Millwall, we looked like we couldn't kick our way out of a wet paper bag. So I said, and our fans have been complaining probably for the last 4 years about a lack of physicality, particularly up front and in the final third, because Conway bumped into their centre half, Marinopoulos or something like that. He ran into him accidentally. He was just trying to stop him. Well, just trying to be a nuisance, really, stop him heading the ball. He wasn't going to jump him because that guy's about 7 feet tall. So Tommy ran into him, whether he landed awkwardly or whatever, but he had to go off. Paqueta, it wasn't a tackle. I think he injured himself when he did that brilliant backheel down the line. It Moyes confirmed afterwards it was a reoccurrence of his old knee injury. So that was good. The other negative one was, and then so they switched Jared Bowen wide and put Mbamba on, who's a local lad. He's out of contract in the summer, and I think he'd be worth City seeing if they could bring him in as an out-of-contract player, because he's told West Ham he didn't want to sign a new one, according to the West Ham guys I was talking to. And they don't think he's good enough for the Premier League at the moment. I'd agree, but I think he caused a few problems in the championship. So he went in the middle. Bowen went out wide. Then you had Bowen and the right back, is it Kufal, on that side. And they were tearing Mometi and bringing a new one. I didn't realise how quick Jared Bowen was. Ball at feet. He's pretty blooming quick. And he was making Cam, earlier on when he was going down that right hand side, he was making Cam Pring look slow. And so we had a conversation about it. And I said, well, according to rumors, you were looking at him. They went, what, him? What, the left back? I said, how much? Were you look? I said, the figures being quoted were around 6 or 8 million. And they went, I would give you a tenner for him. He looks like he's been on the beer. He can't get anywhere. I said, I think it's more how good Bowen is rather than how poor he is. But fair play to Cam. He kept battling, got hold of him. Mometi did the best he could. But when you, Anis is never going to be a great defender, right? And like I said in the previous podcast, if you're picking your wingers on the basis of how well you defend, I think you're barking up the wrong tree. Joe Jordan said the best thing about wingers I ever heard when he said, I don't expect wingers to tackle like fullbacks, but I do expect them to get in the way. And both of our two were getting in the way yesterday as best they could.
Okay.
Because going down that right-hand side, and the big rick, I think, David Moyes
made. This is, let me stop you there, Ian. Yes. This is what you put on Twitter last night. You were going to reveal on the podcast the mistake that David Moyes made. So I've been waiting all day to hear this.
He put Bowen back in the middle. And it enabled Campering got a fantastic opportunity, basically, because nobody moved out to that right-hand side was going to stop Campering going down the line. And if he'd have scored that goal, I'm sure we'd have won the game.
Definitely,
But he didn't. Okay, and Max made some brilliant saves in the first half. So I suppose overall, the draw was a fair result.
We got more than we would have expected to get from there. Mark, I mean, the team...
And don't forget the money for the replay.
Of course, which, what, £250,000 with TV? Maybe £500,000?
Has it been scheduled for TV now?
We don't know yet.
We don't. But it's a good possibility, isn't there? Yeah. Let's face it. The choices.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing. If you look at buying your tickets, I don't know where when the TV will announce the games, possibly after tonight's draw, I would say. That would be great, because then, let's say, for example, is it going to be moved to the Wednesday? Or I don't think it could be moved to the Monday or the Friday.
Well, it can't be moved to the Wednesday. It can't be moved, Ian, because it's on the official website now that it is definitely Tuesday and priority tickets.
No, it isn't. No, it's not. Yeah. It's on the website saying that that is subject to television coverage.
Fair enough. All right.
The alternatives are what? Luton against Bolton, Blackpool against Nottingham Forest, Crystal Palace, Everton. I mean, it looks more attractive.
Wigan Man United could be.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's a greater opportunity for an upset, isn't there, in theory, because obviously we're a championship side.
I think it's a likely game for television.
Yeah.
It doesn't worry me if it's on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, but it could worry some people. Now, there's not going to be a lot of tickets. We might as well talk about the tickets now, aren't we? There's not going to be a lot of tickets available to members, even, because there's 15,000 season ticket holders and we're giving West Ham 3-4-1-4. So they got the whole ATO.
The limit. They got the full allocation, haven't they, that they're allowed. It's four, so it's segregated. So they lose six, don't they? 600. The capacity is about four, though, isn't it? For the ATO.
Well, it's as many as they could have. I mean, don't
I'm just saying that's what they do.
The bottom line is, guys,
it's going to be, if you take out comps and all the freebies and what have you, there's going to be about 7,000 tickets.
7,000.
Floating around, which, if you think about it, then first, all of the priority groups, season ticket holders, then it'd be away fans, and then, you know, yeah, you're right, they're going to be a little bit like hen's teeth getting all of the tickets.
Well, they've announced the priorities. There's two windows. The first one is season ticket holders and half season ticket holders. So there's apparently, according to John Lansdowne, there's 15,000 of those. So then you've got 3414 for West Ham. So that's 18,414. Take that away from, I think, just under 26,000 is our segregated capacity. Yeah. You come out with about 7,500. So take 500 or 600 off that for corporate hospitality and one thing and another.
7,000.
And that's going to leave you with 7,000. But there's a second priority window, and that's for members. Now, I don't know how many members we've got, but I would imagine there's at least 5,000 or 6,000.
Well, it's not our problem because we all got our tickets because we're season ticket holders, so not our problem.
But, well, you get your ticket if you go online and buy it tomorrow. Yeah. But it's from 10 tomorrow to 10 the next morning, and then your seat's released.
Yeah. But then is that not dependent on when the actual game is scheduled? Because does the window roll forward 24 hours? Would they extend it? Maybe not. Because some people,
I wouldn't think so, Dave.
Might say, no, it's probably less than 100 people, but they won't bother for that. But some people might say, oh, I work on a Wednesday, so I couldn't go if it was.
Anyway, that being said, I'm really excited by it.
Well, you got 24 hours to buy your ticket. That's basically it.
He reckons it will be televised, and as Steve has said, it's Tuesday, and Tomo said, no, it's not been confirmed yet, which stacks up with what Ian said. Mark, let's look at the starting lineup. Only 8 subs, and as somebody put, I think, on one of the forums, no room for sentiment there. Maybe it could have been nice to give one of the youngsters just a seat on the bench. You know, why not fill it? But the side picks itself, and it was a midfield, I'll call it a holding midfield duo of Taylor Gardner-Hickman and the resurgent Joe Williams, who Tomo says on the text feed here, if he stays injury-free and can perform like he did for 70% of the remaining games, which is acknowledging what Ian says, that he can't get 3 games in 8 days, but was that a good starting midfield and a predictable starting lineup overall, Mark? And particularly up front as well. He's not changed it, has he?
Yeah, I mean, it's predictable that we got a small squad, and that's probably our strongest lineup, bar Mometi for Weimann, but that's probably the strongest lineup. That's the only swap that you could make. I thought, you know, bar the first 4 minutes, then we got our passing range together, and Williams got the ball behind the defence for Sam Bell, created a good opportunity. Just need a little bit more power on his finish, but it showed what Liam Manning said about being braver on the ball, and it was about one touch passing. That's the thing. Higher up you go, and they've got to use this intensity at games, at championship level. Play the ball forward quicker, but players have got to move quicker into space. We'll get onto the goal, but generally, if you can play a wall pass, that might play the ball backwards to go forwards. If that breaks the concentration of the defender and a guy's moving into that space, it's just clever and it's simple. And when it's executed well, like we'll get onto, it's done devastatingly. But
that's the frustrating thing.
It's such a simple thing. It's frustrating and it's so easy because it doesn't necessarily translate the league form the cup form to league form. Yesterday, you got 62,500 fans. The younger players are on a wave of emotion and they're excited by it. And, you know, their adrenaline's pumping. They go up a level. That may help them. You know, compare that with Preston it's going to be like -2 probably in Lancashire on Saturday before maybe 15,000. And you've got to try and replicate that. But that's what they've got to try and do. Pass the ball quicker, you know, between the lines sometimes rather than pass it side to side. It's a risk and reward. If you get these things wrong, we don't care. As long as you've got a chance at the end of it. If you blaze the ball over, you might score. Take that chance. We didn't do it against Millwall. The players looked scared. So what, you know,
they
should keep playing the move for that goal and some of the others over and over again, because psychologically it's breaking that barrier. That's what they can do.
Yeah. Okay. And talking about the goal, let's talk about their goal. You, Ian, I mean, I, the first 4 minutes, I thought, well, before they even scored, I thought, my God, they're knocking it around. We did look like, you know, little League One team coming up against a team that was going to stroke it all around. As you said, Paqueta did that a little reverse or back heel or whatever it was down the line that took an otherwise moderately effective George Tanner out on that occasion. But the pass that put Bowen into the clear, it was exquisite. Although I've read in some quarters that some people were a little bit disappointed with Max O'Leary and how he dealt with the ball. Tom, who works with me, who plays football for a decent standard, he said he didn't make himself big. How did you see the goal, Ian? I don't know. You're on the halfway line, so you know what? How did you take it?
So first of all, it was a brilliant pass from Paqueta and a brilliant run from Bowen, and it's the sort of thing that doesn't happen to you in the Championship. Those runs. Now, those two players alone, if they left West Ham, would probably leave for circa 200 million. So, okay, so let's say that. Then you talk about George Tanner being, in your words, moderately effective against Paqueta. I'd be absolutely proud if I'd have been moderately effective against Paqueta, because Man City tried to sign him for 85 million quid in the summer. What a player that is. And without demeaning what we did, if he'd have stayed fit and stayed on the field for at least 65 minutes, they might have been got a couple of goals and then the game might have been out of sight. What Max did, the ball came in from Paqueta. There were three defenders there in a line, straight line. Bowen dropped deep and he was doing that all game. He drops into pockets. That's what you can get the ball, get unmarked and get turned around. That's what a lot of our strikers particularly don't do, because they're not as good as he is. Very few people are. So he drops into the pocket, but then he's always looking forward because Paqueta is such a top-class player, and that's not that value, but the type of player we're looking for, someone who can play that pass. So at our level, a Brian Tinian, right, who can see the run, play the pass. So assuming you've got somebody to make the run, he saw the pass, put it in. It was inch perfect. The weight was perfect. And he came out, and Max is in a quandary then. If he kept going on the trajectory he was going or went to ground, I think he'd have just wiped Bowen out. And it would have been a penalty and a potential sending off. That's how I saw it. And I've watched it on Match of the Day and slowed down and all the rest of it. And I just think you have to say it's a really good goal, and Bowen took his chance brilliantly.
Yeah. All right. Let me let Mark have a view.
So then you look at the saves that
Max went on. Well, we can talk about those separately in the saves, because they're individual ones worthy of note. But Mark, your take on the goal, and Ian's just said, you know, he could have got sent off if he'd have taken the man. Somebody, Bennis, said on the text feed here, looked like Dickie hadn't switched on, because they were caught in a line, our defenders, and Bowen ran between them. But it was the perfect start for West Ham, and thoroughly deserved based on the dominant display they showed in the 3 minutes leading up to it, because we really hadn't had a kick up till that point, have we?
No, I don't think they were in exactly a straight line, but the problem was they weren't switched on. So if they were a yard further forward, they might have caught him offside, because that's the sort of ball that they play in the Premier League. So City were caught out. Max O'Leary did make himself big, because at the end, he stood up. Bowen had to go round him, and he ended up kicking it through Cam Pring's legs. So he gave the players a chance to get back on the line, and it still went through Pring's legs. It was a very good finish from Bowen. So Bowen did well. The pass was great, because he's actually out on the left wing. He's actually out on the byline putting this ball in. He's not in the middle of the pitch. Brilliantly executed, like a, you know, like a tee to green shot near the hole. It was that good. But it's a brilliant run from Bowen, but you could slightly fault the defenders, because if you play in a straight line, they should be either a yard forward to catch him offside, or they should sit back deeper to make it harder for him to run into that space, and then his thought process is different. But no, there was nothing wrong with O'Leary's challenge. If he'd have slid in, he could have missed the tackle and he'd been sent off. But he slowed him down, but it was such a good finish that he put it through Pring's legs. Pring's falling backwards to try and block the ball, and it goes between his legs right in the corner. And Bowen is probably, I'd say, he's... he reminds me of Keegan. He's not particularly graceful, but he's a lot of effort and running. He's got, you know, like 150% every single game. And I think he's got a spot in the Euros next year if he keeps on playing at that
level.
He does take him.
How much did they pay for him?
I don't know. It was only a few million.
I think they paid about 16 million from Hull. Yeah.
And where did he have a career of note before?
He was with AFC Hereford before that. They picked him up on AFC Hereford.
We had a look at him when he was at Hereford, and we thought he was a bit slow.
Well, shows what good coaching.
That's
shows
true.
What good coaching.
But it's one scout's assessment, isn't it? That's the trouble.
Yeah. I mean, you look at players when they're younger and you don't think that they're necessarily going to develop into. Look at the number of players that have left big clubs and all of a sudden they turn up somewhere else and they're a world beater because they've gone away. They put on like a stone and a half of muscle. Ivan Toney, classic example. You know, he's a bit small to play up front.
Oh, he couldn't get in Lee Johnson starting 11 at Barnsley, Ivan Toney.
Ashley
Fletcher was in front of him as a starter when they got promoted because he left, didn't he, midway through the 2015-16. He had Josh Brownhill, Ivan Toney, Ashley Fletcher, another guy from Southampton. And Toney was on the bench. Toney went from Northampton, didn't he, to Newcastle, didn't make it there. Was it Scunthorpe United on loan when we were in when we won League One? He went round a load of clubs before Peterborough bought him and moulded him into the player that he's become.
The player is that he said. Yeah. Apparently, he said I owe Brentford a lot, and as somebody said, but he didn't say, and I'm going to stay with them through thick and thin if Arsenal come in for their offer. Right, let's talk about the saves. I'll speak to you on these first, Ian. There was three in the first half and one in the second, and three in the first half. Correct me if I'm wrong here, was the absolute stunner where he must have had concrete hands to not let the ball just flip through. There was another one that he turned around the post, and then didn't he have to save one from Cam? I mean, they were three saves, as Annie has said on here, Annie Harish, and you do a lot of posting on the Twitter, Annie, so be interesting to have you on the podcast sometimes. Annie said Max more than made up for it afterwards, which he did with those three. Best of those was the run with a strong hand, wasn't it? Yeah, because he was going one way and his hand went
from
the other.
From Fornals.
Ian.
Yeah. Well, you've just described him, Dave, really. But, yeah, it was a great save with a strong hand when his body was going the other way. I mean, most times a keeper would get a hand to it and it'd bounce off his hand and go down into the net or up into the net. But he got a really strong hand to that, Max. Fair play to him. Because he had no right to save that. The second one from Ward-Prowse was a shot after some good play on the right flank again. And it was arrowing into the bottom, Max's bottom right-hand corner. And once again, he got a strong hand to push it out to the side. He didn't hit it out in front of the goal. He hit it out to the side. The one from Cam came from a cross. And Cam's got a guy, got Bowen, I think, coming in behind him.
Bowen diverted it across to him, and I think it was Souček. Coming in at far post. Sorry.
There was a player coming in behind him, and he's got a toe on it. Unfortunately, that toe was sending it towards the goal, but Max stopped it and I'll call it shoveled it around the post and out of danger. So we could easily have gone into halftime 3-0 down.
And that was without Paqueta being on. Yeah, because he'd gone for...
The one where he got a strong hand.
Yeah, I mean, a West Ham fan...
Sorry, go on. You go on first.
Go on, Mark. Yeah, go on. What were you going to say? Mark, you were going to say to Ian. Talk to
going
Ian.
Going back to what Ian said, when Bowen was at his most dangerous, he took Cam Pring down the outside. But, you know, note for our players, you know, crossing a ball, you don't just have to hit it across the 6-yard box. He played it backwards towards Fornals, taking out our defenders. And Fornals is hitting across the ball. That was why it was such a good save from Max, because his weight's going the other way and he sticks his hand out. But it's
he really leathered that.
Yeah, he really leathered it. But Bowen was, I mean, that's a Bowen, that pass is excellent, because, you know, we're expecting him to hit it across a 6-yard box and he passes it back. But you must have, and City need to take note of this, because we don't do this often enough. You've got a midfield player coming onto the penalty area, all the momentum coming onto the ball, destroyed the ball cleanly, and 9 times out of 10 you'll score.
Well, luckily, Jason Knight did one of those within the last 6 weeks, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, he did it against Norwich.
And
equally,
that Arsenal game, yesterday, looking at the highlights of that, was it Odegaard? He had a similar ball played back to him, and he absolutely leathered it, and it came off the bar. Okay, so half time, we go in 1-0 down. You're always in the game like that. I think the only chance we'd had in the first half was a half decent shot from Sam Bell.
And a dicky header from a corner.
And a dicky header. Straight down. The goalkeeper was perfectly positioned for that anywhere else, and it would have gone in. Ian, take us through Tommy's goal, because it came from the high press, really, and errors. I've seen a West Ham comment on it, just somebody, a webcam type thing, saying, look at that, they're pressing us. Oh, look, they forced us into an error. But, you know, you still have to tuck it away. And Tommy did exceptionally well. But the pass, somebody said the pass, Joe, mishit it. And Tommy's first touch was impeccable. But how did you see it from your vantage point?
The ball was won because I think it was Sam Bell pressed
Romero,
the West Ham
Emerson,
player.
Sorry.
He just hooked the ball away with his right foot up in the air. We came in and won it, and it went to Jason Knight. Jason Knight, lovely little layoff back to Joe Williams. Joe's hit the ball with good spin on it in good pace, but he's hit it low, and he's hit it quick. Tommy's on the half turn. He's picked it up. Good first touch, and he's away. And once Tommy gets away, defenders shouldn't be able to catch him, because he's not looked at times. He's not looked as quick as he was last season. But I think a lot of that is to do with the service he gets, which is I'll say 7 times out of 10 is crummy. So he's gone off. And then Fabianski made it a bit easier for him by staying, I wouldn't say on his line, but he was certainly not outside his 6-yard box. He certainly had no intention of coming out to Tommy's feet. And Tommy struck it well, and it's gone in the bottom right-hand corner. And then we had both seams and limbs in the away end.
Limbs.
I was totally impressed.
Going in the corporate sector, Ian, or were you worried about being
Did your prawn sandwich go everywhere, Ian? Was it, you know, all that? And
Ian was more worried about being attacked by veteran members of the ICF or whatever.
I can't see much upsetting Ian. I think he'd be very calm and under fire.
I was there, mate. I was celebrating. I had two City fans sat beside me. Behind me. I had my daughter and son-in-law to the left. And Kelly's a City fan. Tom's, I don't know if he's into football or whatever. He doesn't really understand it. So a lot of the day, he was spending it like this. looking around and asking me questions. So that was all right. And there was two guys I was chatting to next to me. Big lads, and they went, "You deserve that," because I did. You know, when you're in a situation like that, you don't act like a dipstick and start jumping around and waving your arms and all the rest of it. But I stood up and giving it that, so everybody knew I was there, and everybody was having a laugh about it, because they said to me during the game, after we had a conversation, and they said, what do you think? I said, well, I think it's about who gets the next goal. And I said, if we can keep you out for 20 minutes, the longer it's 1-0, we've got a puncher's chance. And that's probably how it happened. They said, you could go on and win this now, because it's not happening for us. We're just not doing it. And we could have done. We had the chances, but we just weren't quite clinical enough.
Mark, your thoughts on the goal? I mean, great for Tommy's confidence. I mean, I think he's, and Ian said, oh, you don't know the individuals. I think Tommy got on really well with Alex Scott. He's being asked to do a job that he's not cut out for, which is to lead the line as a one, yeah? His confidence, he was injured, he's come back, he's now got, what was it, 5 goals in 8 games, I think, or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, a few penalties,
He must have loved, if he was going to score a goal somewhere, he'd sooner it have been against West Ham in front of a national TV audience and up at Birmingham or up at Preston. So do you think that might, although with his goal scoring record, it's not bad of late, but do you think that we're going to see the best of Tommy over the next remaining?
Oh, I think so. I think so. When there's a chance of getting in the Euro squad in Germany next season, you know, you're up against like a Lyndon Dykes. I think he's got a good chance. But what he was helped by in the second half, and Ian would probably agree, I think Jason Knight was playing a little bit deeper in the pocket, so he was able to give us more chances. His link-up play, Jason, was great. Much better in the second half. Didn't see much of him in the first half. But with that goal, it's two bits of pressing because Emerson balloons the ball up, as Ian said. But Dickey comes up to the halfway line and cushions the ball down. I mean, what Jason Knight was doing with that back flick, I thought it was like a wall pass. He flicks it back to Joe Williams. And there's a tweet with from the reverse angle. It's great, so you can see it all, you know, from behind. Yeah, obviously that's what reverse means. Yeah, stating the bleeding obvious again, Sybil. But Williams pass, but he hits it first time, first one, you know, one touch, pass from Knight, the pass from Williams, and he's hitting across his body, so he's got to control the ball and direct it at the same time. But Conway's on the move, but yeah. But ordinarily, the pass would be too powerful for him. It could go past him. So his touch to take it in stride.
Yeah.
Then he's gone past Zuma. Obviously, you know, he's past Zuma, bearing down on goal. Fabianski does make it a little bit easier for him because, I mean, if Fabianski had been watching Tommy, he would know that if you have to give him a decision to make going round, and for any player, it's much harder. But I remember Alan Shearer, when he was one-on-one, he always used to do the same thing. Even if a keeper came out on his line, he always hit the ball high into the corners. That was his first instinct, was to strike the ball early.
You had that comment there, Mark. Anish on the text feed here has said... that Tommy was speaking on the official club podcast, aka Three Peeps, that he's getting used to playing as a one and is enjoying this Manning system. And Hogg has obviously been teaching him more in one-on-one situations. Obviously, we don't have that access
to
all areas, but we are where we are.
I love it. Matt Withers is going to be out. He's going to be complaining to us. I loved it. I loved the way you just
said that. I couldn't give a shit. Ian, you said we had chances in the second half and didn't convert them. I mean, was that would Cam have been disappointed that he sent that one wide of the post? Because that seemed quite a clear-cut chance for me there.
Yeah, I think so, because he struck it quite well. You know, it wasn't like he sliced it and it went right up in the air, 30 yards wider. It went off the side of his foot. He struck it well, but it was just wide of the target. And I think if he'd have hit it, because Cam can strike a ball, he hit it quite well. But, I mean, it just went wide. But I don't think we worked Fabianski overly hard. I can't remember him making an outstanding save in the whole game. But Max made another one in the second half where there was a knockdown from a corner and a bit of a kerfuffle. And the lad they brought on to replace Paquetta, who was playing centre forward when he came on, Mbumba. He struck it and Max saved it. I mean, it was struck reasonably well and point blank range. So, those things, you've got to save those things by, it's already saying, well, it is legs. Great, they're part of your body. And if they keep the ball out of the net, fair play.
Jay,
I don't care if he saves everything.
Gibbon
in his
mused
legs.
About it on Match of the Day because he had to adjust his feet. He said it looks easy, but he has to get his feet right. And
how many times do you see the ball go through a defender's legs or the goalkeeper's legs for a goal? How many times? Dozens, I mean, hundreds. And
we look.
Yeah, because Ings had the rebound, David, but I think he would have covered it anyway because Ings didn't get it on target. I mean, I think the West Ham fans don't think much of Danny Ings. He shanked it wide, but I think Max was down, would have been down to save it anyway. But his instinct, his reflex saves yesterday were great. I mean, James Ward-Prowse, that shot. I mean, he could have come to collect the ball because the defender's looking at him. The ball span up in the air, I think, from a rebound, and he didn't come to get it. And then Ward-Prowse just hits the ball early. But like Ian said, he's down so quickly, but he's got such strong hands, there's no chance of a follow-up.
Yeah.
That's a sign of a good goalkeeper.
Yeah, well, I think he's banished all requirements to maybe have a goalkeeper as top of our shopping list. We'll talk about transfers in a minute. Ian, you'd like to be good on the statistics, and it's a measure of how far we've come, and I think this is reflected in the how strong we were in the second half. But to come up against, and we're not a possession-based side, or we weren't under Nigel, but to get 43% possession, 11 shots, 5 on target, in the game, that's pretty damn good, really, isn't it? You know, and that I mean, West Ham had 17 shots, 4 on target, so they had more, but double figures away from home, you know, we wouldn't have dreamed of that, well, even 2 weeks ago.
And I think it shows that one of the when I was talking before the game, one of the guys said, "What do you reckon you'll do then? You'll park the bus." And I said, "No, not with this coach. We won't, because that's not what he wants to do and it's not how he wants to play. So it wouldn't matter who we were playing. We try and give him a game of football."
Right.
And after about four minutes when the goal went in, I thought, oh, dear me, here we go. But in fairness, we kept playing the same way. And they started to get a bit frustrated. Now, they had far better chances in the first half. Let's not gloss over it. But I thought they were... they began to this phrase, we demoralized them with our football. I think they were surprised at how we played and how well we played that style. Now, we didn't get it all right by a country mile, but it was, I think it was really a quality performance in the second half. And we just, the game wore on, and you start to think, well, are we going to get an equalizer? Are we going to? But when we got the equaliser and we got more confident, you could see the belief spread through the team. If it wasn't there to start with, and it certainly a lot was, but let's say the belief went up from 80% to 100%. And you thought, we can really, we can do this. And the West Ham fans around me were saying, you're going to win this.
Yeah, and
we can see it coming.
I mean, my approach to the game was very on a hide into nothing here and feeling very downhearted after the performances against Birmingham and Millwall. And it just came as a surprise, and it shows what can be done. And, you know, it's all about belief and behaviours, to use Liam's phrases and what have you.
Yeah, behaviours, right?
Yeah, looking at the ground while I'm saying it.
Right.
Mark,
right.
VAR.
Yeah.
VAR.
Yes.
And a referee.
Yeah, I'll have one with
VAR. Was it in action?
Yes, it was. It wasn't our first game with VAR, because somebody asked me on the fans forum, because we got the bad end of that against Sheffield United in 2021 when Alfie Mawson was sent off for handball on the line.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that was probably the.
I didn't realise we had VAR.
Yeah,
for that
it's
game.
A stupid thing. I mean, I can't understand if it's either, you know. It should be one for all, but if you're playing a Premier League team, of course, VAR is there. VAR. I think if the only things they would have looked at, and they didn't mention this on the commentary, was a couple, you know, the aerial challenges when Mavropanos went down, and I think Suchek felt Cam Pring's challenge as well, didn't he, early on?
That was right in front of me. There was nothing wrong with it.
No, I mean, and he was okay about it. They weren't complaining. They've got problems in for the replay, David, because Jared Bowen looks like he's rolled his ankle. Mikel Antonio, he's aggravated an injury in warm weather training. They got Kudus out for a while. Another guy on African Cup duty. So they'll have a few players out for the replay.
Well, and the other thing, this is, I didn't realise, is there no Premier League games this week? Have they got like?
I don't think so. Yeah, they're on a break, aren't they?
That's correct.
Yeah.
So they're not.
They would have got a look. Yeah,
they're off for warm weather training.
Yeah, they'd have got a 2 week break
at the moment. Yeah. Yeah, but they won't have a 2 week break now, will they? Because the replay next week.
It's disrupted them. Ian, what did you think of the referee yesterday? I thought he was quite even handed. I didn't see any Premier League team bias from my perspective.
No, not at all. But yeah, they all try and let the game run, which is, I prefer they do that. And so, what you're going to find, like all things in life, some people are better at it than others. But the Premier League referees should be the creme de la creme. And they've got all the toys and gizmos to help them out. They've got the goal line technology we've got in the EFL, and they've got VAR as well. Now, I don't think we've got the technology at Ashton Gate yet to have VAR. So my opinion on VAR in the FA Cup is you either have it at every game or none of them. And I mean from the third round onwards. I'm not talking about when, you know, Chudley United played the dog in duck in the like the 14th round. I'm talking about as soon as you get to the third round and the Premier League clubs and EFL, the Championship clubs come in, then you either have entirely VAR or you say, no, we're not having it right the way through the competition. Mm-hmm. And then people can, because we're always told, well, VAR is going to sort out all these things and we won't have all these conversations about referees. And it seems that that's
because you know why that is, don't you? Sorry, go on.
All right,
it's because VAR, well, this is obvious. It's another layer of refereeing. We thought, didn't we, technology would be instant. We thought we'd get instant decisions. I think the main problem is the referees are having some responsibility taken over away from them. It's almost like, this is just my analogy, you get a judge directing the jury in a case. You know, if you've got a jury, let them think for themselves. If they're going to be directed, they're obviously going to they might change
like
their
mind. It's like anything. You're old. You're younger than us, Mark. Not by that much. A little bit, yeah. But Ian and I, you know, when computerization came in, you know, you just replaced one lot of manual tasks with a different set of other things to complicate it. But there we go.
Well, you've only got to look. I mean,
we didn't talk about Tommy putting the ball in the back of the net because that was a very late linesman flag that seemed to go on for an age before
this thing, haven't they? There's a reason for it, I think. We can argue it. Because, of course, some decisions are marginal. You stick the ball in the back of the net and then they make up their mind because they're 9 times out of 10 it's offside. But if it's that one time where he's just slightly behind the offside line and you put it in the back of the net, then it's a goal. But this one, I mean, it's because it was like 6 yards offside. But that's the instructions. Those are the rules. So we just got to live with it.
Yeah. Matt Moore has said on here, Zach looks like he was born to play Manning ball. I mean, Ian, our central defenders, I mean, as a back four, and you know, I know you're a staunch supporter of Tanner and he didn't look out of place yesterday either, but, you know, we were up against a side that's in the top 6, probably their real positions, probably about 8th or something like that, but they're there now. Top 6 in the top league in Europe. And we didn't look out of place at all, really, did we? None of those. I know Paqueta going off made a difference, but we looked solid.
Once we got up to the speed of the game, and it took us about 10 minutes, I think. The game was happening around our lads to start with, and that concerned me. But we kept believing, kept doing it, kept passing the ball. And that's the way we're going to play. And anybody that says, well, I don't like it, we ought to lump it and we ought to go through it, you're going to be ever so disappointed under this bloke because that's not what we're going to do. And he will bring in players that can play in that style, including if he brings in a forward. And we are looking for certainly an attacking midfield player. And we've got bids out there. And we're looking at players that can play. So we're not going to go out and get Ed on a stick. It would be a striker that can play in that way. So a guy that can get in behind, make the clever runs. Tommy makes really good runs. He's been really well coached through the academy, and he makes really clever runs. At the moment, we haven't got the guy to give him the ball at the club. We just haven't got one. Jason Knight's not that guy. Joe Williams isn't normally. So who else is there? I suppose you'd say Cal Naismith is a good passer of the ball from midfield. He's rarely available. So, I think if we make signings, and I think we'll only make two unless someone goes out. And people have been speculating about people going out and all the rest of it.
Do you think, let me ask you this question, Ian. Do you think, let's say Tommy gets a, let's say we get a draw at Preston. We'll talk briefly about Preston before we wrap up, very briefly. But let's say Tommy scores against Preston, gets a worldie against West Ham that proves to be the winner. Yeah, because you all remember when, what was it? Who was the winger that we had? Dave Cottrell. We played at Wigan when that was a game when Kerry got sent off for
fisticuffs with
Bradley Orr. Was it? It was,
Northampton.
Was it Northampton?
Northampton. Yeah, and, we went 1-0 down, 1-2-1 with 10
Cottrell
men.
Cottrell went for £2.5 million, I think, wasn't it? Yeah,
based on to Wigan.
Nothing in particular. Do you, and Tommy, you, when you were saying there about Euro 24, I forgot two things. A, Scotland were in it, and B, that Tommy was Scotland.
Well, you were doing that old joke about Scotland are preparing for the next World Cup. The manager's bought a 48-inch TV, which is the old joke,
that's
wasn't
right. But Ian, do you think somebody might, and there's a thread on OTIB as well, saying, should we cash in on Tommy? He's out of contract next summer, summer 25. Do you think somebody might make a cheeky bid for Tommy?
Yeah, is the answer. I mean, because the word you said is might. There's a big difference between might and will, and it's like the dominoes falling, isn't it, all over again. Somebody thinks, well, I quite fancy him, so I'll try and sign him, which frees up a lot of money for us to go and get a couple of players that we were interested in buying in the summer, but we can't bring in January because of FFP. Honestly, if someone goes out, I don't think it'll be one of our bright young prospects, if you want to call it that. I would say it would be more likely be a squad player that hasn't had a lot of playing time. But then again, it all depends on injuries once again. So we know that Ross McCrory would be back for Preston.
Well, that's this week, Ian, isn't it? That's what you're saying.
Yeah, so Ross is back. We'll have... If they're not available for this game, we should have Sykes and Roberts back for Watford and possibly Rob Atkinson. So certainly by the end of January. Now, Cal Naismith is going to be early Feb. And then that's, touch wood, that's your injuries cleared up.
Touch wood.
But we've still got a small squad. It'll be less small by two players because I think... the recruitment team under Brian Tinian are looking in the right markets because they're looking at players we can afford. So they are looking abroad. We have got a network and they are looking at it bringing the right people in. But they will be of the profile that we're talking about.
So we're not going to go in. Those players, Ian, correct me if I'm wrong, Finn Azaz, he elected to go to Middlesbrough, and I've only been to Middlesbrough twice. I'm talking about not to the, well, I've been to, I haven't been to the Riverside, went to the old Ayrton Park. A hellhole Middlesbrough is, but he elected to go there under, what's the
Michael
guy?
Carrick.
Michael Carrick. Hasn't some other player gone to Stoke under Schumacher?
Luke Cundall. Yeah, going back to Middlesbrough.
So Cundall's gone to Stoke, so that's two players.
Well, we were never, just to say that we were never in for Cundall.
It's just speculation.
All right, but so Plymouth,
he played 13 games for Plymouth, 11 of them were as a sub. He couldn't get in Plymouth.
Okay, so that's not a big
thing. With Azaz, what might have smoothed the path, of course, is that I think it was Aaron Ramsey and Cameron Archer, of course, were both on loan from Villa to Middlesbrough last season. I think Ramsey went to Burnley.
Yeah.
And of course, Cameron Archer's gone to Sheffield United. That would have helped. And if you're looking at it, you know, as a layman, Middlesbrough look like a more, they're not a parachute team, but, you know, they look more of they look a better proposition, don't they, than Bristol City in terms of their squad strength and ability to get in the playoffs. So, and I think it was $2.5 million they paid for him. I don't know if we'd have paid that much, but we were in there and they beat us to it. So just got to move on.
I can tell you that everything was agreed. Fee, wages, all that. The lad just wanted to go to Middlesbrough. Mm. I suppose based on, as you say, what you were saying is Cameron Archer told him it was great there and everybody said it's fantastic. Yeah, yeah. And Carrick's another one of these bright young English coaches.
Who's got a playing record and with Man United, so maybe it was the draw of the manager.
That makes no difference. He's done well.
I think, if you look at the way the football market's going now, nobody wants a manager anymore. They want a head coach. Millwall have done it. Plymouth have just done it to replace. Stoke have done it by getting Schumacher from Plymouth. So the days of the, with respect, the Gary Rowett and Nigel Pearson, if you will, Neil Warnock, those are disappearing quite quick. And they're all going, Millwall have done it with Joe Edwards. Plymouth have brought in the guy that was, I can't remember his name, but he's coach of the England under 20s.
Yeah, I've never heard of him before.
So this is the profile. Sorry?
Not Parsley then.
No.
No. But this is the profile of the guys that they're looking for. And Birmingham, I don't think Birmingham appointed yet. But Carsley's in the frame there because he's a former Birmingham player.
Birmingham have got Mowbray. That was announced today.
Well, they've gone the opposite way then. And that's quite strange because I had to smile when they said, they sat Rooney and said, well, we've decided to go in a new direction. The bloke had been there for about 12 weeks.
15 games.
And that now they decided to go in a new direction after 12 weeks, after they give him a 3.5-year contract. Yeah. That just staggers me.
Made a point on here on the text feed. He said, I don't know why Manning tell everyone that Azaz didn't want to come here, degrading ourselves by sharing that info. Just don't say anything about it and move on. He's got a point there, really, hasn't he? There's, you know, you just say...
No, not at all. No, there's... Look. One minute we're saying we want communication and we want transparency and openness. And when we get it, we say, oh, we don't want that. Mm. What the chances are, somebody else on here has said, I think it was Benny, said, you know, we've doing all this work and it's gone 8 days and we haven't brought anybody in. Yeah, but you can do a lot of work. And then when you start making bids, people say, I want to stay in the north. People say, I want to stay where I am. Like the lad we tried to sign for Bolton in the summer.
Thompson.
I think my future lies here at the moment. And that isn't disrespectful. That can be viewed as either loyal or you look at Borough. Borough have been in the Premier League. Borough have got a lot better recent history than we have. And for all you know, I mean, Azaz is from London or is born in London, but he's been at Villa since he was about 8.
Yeah.
So, his missus might come from Newcastle or something
We don't know.
There's lots of reasons.
We don't know any.
Yeah,
of that.
And the other thing you've got, of course, he's got agents, talking in their ear as well. You just can't do anything about it.
There's lots of
different factors. The club, like Ian said, the club won't get ahead on a stick. They want players that meet certain criteria. They're not just going to get players for the sake of it. You might not see anybody coming in purely because it doesn't meet those requirements.
Talking about players head on a stick, Kiefer Moore, I think he played for Bournemouth at the weekend, actually. But, I mean, is he a player?
In the cup, yeah, he scored.
He played and scored. But, Mark, do you think he's a player that, you know, would add any value to the side. You know, there's some horse trading to be done because they owe us money for Scott in installments. You know,
yeah, I wouldn't look at it like that. It's whether
would you welcome him if he were to come.
He could play. It would add a different dimension to our play. Whether Liam Manning wants that type of player, but what you got to remember is that he was lined up for a move to Millwall and he turned it down. He didn't want to go there. So they obviously agreed a loan fee. They'd agreed the wages. I wouldn't imagine Millwall playing all of it. What's he got to be on? 50 grand a week? 40, at least 40?
All of that,
50 grand a week? City aren't going to be able to afford 25 grand a week. They'd have to pay, they could only afford 40% of
wages. Another thing, with you, Mark.
So
the transfer window's open. There's not a great deal happening, but one move, I think it's gone through, and it's our friends up at Hull City. There's talk of them signing on loan from Liverpool, Carvalho, ex-Fulham player.
Carvalho, ex-Fulham, yeah.
The ex-Fulham player. And somebody said they're really going for it because they'd have a front four of Carvalho, Tufan, there was another
Connolly
player.
And Sorry? Twine. Connolly, Aaron Connolly, who scored against us, and Twine.
Yeah, there was that. But well, I think there was four, excluding Twine. Mm-hmm. Do you see?
Well, they're looking at a guy. They're looking at that little winger who scored against us for Burnley as well. I can't remember his name. Manuel.
Manuel Benson.
Benson. All right.
Manuel Colin Benson. Really now, they were linked with him as well.
And with Twine, maybe a marginal player. Mark, and I'll ask the same question of Ian. Mark, do you see somebody like Twine being a Liam Manning type player, and where would he fit into our side if he came? Or Ian shaking his head, so I'll take
left
your
side
view,
of a front three. He played for him at MK Dons, but is he good enough? He didn't look that good against us, really. He was very one dimensional. Don't think he really got in a game apart from
Burnley. Want $4.5 million for
he's
him.
On loan.
So we're paying that then.
Whether we want him on loan anyway, who knows? But I don't think Manning will bring players in for the sake of it. So unless they're better than what we got, I don't think the club will be wasting the money.
And Annie Harris has just picked up that other player whose name I couldn't remember, who was playing for Cardiff. Was he ex-Villa as well? Philogene. Was he Jaden Philogene? Because they said they had a front four then of, if they sign him, Carvalho, Tufan, Philogene and Connolly. That's pretty tasty as a front.
Yeah, Benson can hit a ball. I mean, he scored a worldie against City and he scored a few of them last season. Has he just fallen out of favour at Burnley? Because I haven't seen him in any first 11.
He's not good enough to play in the Premier League.
They got him from Belgium, didn't they? I mean, he got a massive turnover of players, didn't he, Vincent Kompany last season?
If he came in and say you were going to play him instead of Anis Mehmeti, then he might be decent at that. But I mean, he doesn't strike me as the sort of player who's what I'd call workman-like, and he's going to do any tracking back at all. At least, you know, Anis tries to do that. He's not good at it by a long way, but he is improving, and it gets him into the game more. But I think Liam Manning rates him. He said he rates him. So, I mean, it's not me thinking it. He's actually said it. So I think it would be, I think the guy at Hull is prepared to pay big wages. Now we'll see how that.
They're going for it.
Well, it's about going for it. He's got Twine on loan from Burnley. So can he take a second one in there? And whereas Benson normally plays on the right, although he's left sided. So, you know, they like to invert their wingers these days, don't they? I mean, we've got a right-footed guy on the left flank. So, yeah, Pat, I don't know. I mean, I think if they sign them, I mean, don't forget, a couple of weeks ago, we beat them, and they didn't really look
they? No, not at all. Although Connolly looked
for you. Benny's just said something. Listening to Manning, he wouldn't inspire me to sign for the club. I struggle to listen to him talk, and it's very dull. But I don't think
was Nigel to that extent. Nigel,
I mean, it's all about charisma. Yeah. I think, you know, it's different strokes for different folks, isn't it? Really,
I want to go and have my tea. And I'm sure, honestly, I'm going to have my tea.
All right. I honestly don't want a song and dance man or somebody this, you know, good in the bar or something like
good
that. I want coaches that are
good in the dressing room,
like Hogg. You know, Tommy's made the point. Chris Hogg is working with him on his finishing. So he goes out on Saturday and gets a goal against a Premier League club. Great finish. Now, he's had a few one-on-ones lately that the keepers, in fairness, the keeper saved, and you have to give them some credit. So the players, I think we'll get the right players in who want to play for us and want to play the right way. And I think any players that can't adapt, he'll move them out, either out of contract or he'll get he'll get fees for them. I mean, that's what Brian Tinian does all day.
Magic of the cup is well and truly with us, certainly until a week on Tuesday, assuming it is Tuesday. It is back to league action on Saturday, up to Preston, and there seems to be a bit of an atmosphere between Ryan Lowe and the fans. Just a few snippets that I've read on their social media.
The natives are restless.
The peasants are revolting.
We'll wrap up on this point, Mark. To keep our season alive, because there's still 20 games to go.
Gave it up last week.
Yeah, but look, but we got to get something at Preston. Because if you look at what's coming up in the league at home after that, it's then Watford home, Coventry away, Leeds at home.
Yeah.
There's no easy games in this division, and we're capable of winning any of them, but we got to get something at Preston on Saturday. Would you agree?
Yeah. I think we find it easier to play away, because most of the time, except against Birmingham, we have less possession of the ball. We're a counter-attack inside. And that's what, like West Ham, they play much better as a counter-attack inside, suck up possession, brilliant on the break. And they got players like Jared Bowen to sit the ball in a net and other players when they're fit. We're not going to we've got to show some intensity, and we just need to score the first goal. I think we score an early goal. The natives are restless. My relatives are Preston fans. Ryan Lowe's tweaked the formation that was successful early in the season, and they're really suffering for it. They got a good win against Leeds the other week, albeit when the goalkeeper was sent off, and then they go and get beaten in the next game by Sheffield Wednesday. It took us 11 years to win between wins at Preston. I was hoping to go this Saturday. I can. But we'll be watching the game. City can and should win that game, but they've got to score the first goal, and I think then we'll be comfortable.
Okay, all right. Ian, do you agree with that sentiment of Mark's and mine, that we really, of the next four league games coming up, the easiest, although no games are easy, but we need this. After those two disappointing results against Birmingham and Millwall, we really need to get something up there. Or will the players have Tuesday night on their mind?
Well, they wouldn't be normal if they didn't have Tuesday night on their mind. But they've also been given a tremendous lift from that performance that was needed after Millwall. So Birmingham was nothing like as bad, but we just didn't do anything in the final third, once again, because we haven't got the player who can pick out the strikers and create the chances, and anything we created, we missed. So the key one for me, well, I've watched Preston a couple of times. I watched him against Leeds, and the guy Miller, who plays on the left wing, is a real menace. He plays number 23, and he plays on the left wing, and he absolutely ran Leeds ragged. Now, he's a player that really needs marking, so that'll be another tough task for George Tanner. We know that Mark Sykes won't be back, so I'm guessing it'll be Sam Bell again. I was really pleased to see Sam on the right-hand side instead of Andy Vyman. Whether Liam Manning decides he's going to freshen it up and bring Andy Vyman in and play him out there, I would rather he kept going with Sam, but that Miller is a real threat. Some of their other better players haven't been playing that. I was always very impressed with Reese, who played up front, the big nine. He hasn't been playing recently because he's only just come back from quite a serious knee injury. Brown in midfield, I mean, we know Masengo went up there and ran the game in one of the last few games we played up there. I'm hopeful for the game. I mean, a point away from home, I don't think is ever a disaster. But right. after the Millwall defeat, we could do with winning the game, but it's not
with all three. Interesting you mention a name there, Hanoa Masengo. Sort of can't get in their team. Had he not gone, would you have seen a quick yes/no from both of you, Ian? And forget all we know about him, because you say you never go back and what have you. Would you have seen Masengo as a Manning player?
Yeah, I think so. He was, I mean, probably more when he came in than when he left us, because we did this thing where we tried to turn him into RoboCop. Yeah. But when he first came in, I thought he was very technically adept and wanted to play the ball forward. Mm. So I would say definitely he'd be a Liam Manning player. Question is, he wouldn't be that guy who's going to play in that more attacking role, the creative guy, the one that takes the killer set pieces and all the rest of it. And that's the guy, ideally, and can get a few goals that we're looking for. But, Mark, possibly.
Would you agree with Ian and my own view that Masengo, you know, if he'd have stuck it out, he'd have been... Would Liam got more out of him?
Possibly. I mean, the problem was he based on his performances over four seasons, that was the problem. But I think he needs to play in a team that want to get the ball forward more quickly, and we could see that. But he got two assists, didn't he? No goals in just under four, three and a half seasons, because he went out to to France, didn't he? To Auxerre. At the end of last season. So yeah, he's a player that could get the ball and needed an option to get the ball forward. The longer he dwelled on it, he got caught in possession too often. Yeah. But when he started it, he was about a stone lighter. When we bulked him up, he just didn't seem the same. He looked a will-o'-the-wisp.
All right, we need
he played on his confidence, but then we seemed to suck that out of him and he disappeared.
We did.
There you go.
We did. Ian's just said on the text feed here, that's our Ian who's replying to somebody on there, loans are on the table and we're working hard and have bids out there. Prem's prefer, but loans if not. Of course, Ian, just final point from you. The money, the TV money from the West Ham game, let's call it, would I be right to assume, incremental into the budget? £500,000 if you include gate receipts and TV?
Do you mean the TV money would be about 100 grand to the home team?
And they split the gate is split three ways, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's split four. I think it's 45, 45, 10 with the FA getting 10%. That goes into a pool that we get some money out of, get a share of,
prize money
at the end of the year. All the clubs do. So we got 45%. Bear in mind that the gate that won't include any commercial revenue, hospitality, anything like that. But bear in mind that both clubs have reduced prices. So it's not like saying we'll get 45% of normal price in it at West Ham, which would be millions.
Right, so the game is worth, if you say what you said for TV, I'll say conservatively £300,000, right? Yeah, and there's 20. That's a rough number. That's £300,000. That's signing a player at 15 grand a week on loan for the remainder of the season. In simple terms,
If all the tickets on Saturday, let's say all the tickets for all 62,500 people there were a tenner, and some might be more, because you could make the tickets more that were on the side rather in the enclosures, if you like, rather than it the two ends of the ground. But let's assume that's £625,000 there. Then City do something more or less the same and get 26,000 in the ground. So I suppose with the TV money and all the bits and bobs, you've got to remember City keep all their hospitality as well.
Yeah.
The two games, it could add up to £1 million. Well, quid.
I mean, it's got to be, if you're, because we had the word budget shoved down our throats early on in the season and not being able to exceed it. It's not like we got a draw away at Stevenage in front of 3,000, because you've just said it. 60. there's an extra £500,000 over the two games, over and above what could have reasonably been expected. And that could go out and sign two players on loan at £15,000 a week. If we felt there was a chance of, you know, let's say we beat Preston and we beat Watford, the window's still open.
It gives you, some leverage. That's
Money coming into the club isn't a bad thing.
No, I'm right? just so trying to take we, a positive we all know that. View. I'm trying to take a positive view.
It's not bad news, is it?
No,
it's real good
news. If you want bad news, think of Plymouth Argyle. They had two players who were on season-long loans in Finnazaz and Luke Cundall, and they lost them both.
And their manager
That's bad
well.
News.
And their manager too. And their manager as well. Yeah.
All right, guys and listeners, thank you for your support this evening. We're going to go and watch the draw.
Who would you like in the next round then? I like somebody, if we beat West Ham, I want the easiest draw, if that's possible, at home.
Well, that'd be Bristol Rovers at home on the basis that they'll probably beat Norwich then, won't it? Yeah? So that'd be lovely. It'd be good to get that. I remember my first season watching City, 67-68 season, 0-0 at Ashton Gate. And I stood over where the Dolman stand is now. The only time I ever watched a game from that side, before the Dolman stand was built, and I was stood over there, 39,000. Then more recently, I think it was 83, 84. It was a draw at Ashton Gate again. And then Martin Hurst got a winner. Is that right? Around about 84?
No, but Martin Hurst got the winner in the 83, 84 one at Eastville. Tom Ritchie scored. We went 1-0 behind to Archie Stevens. Tom equalised after Terry came on.
So that wasn't on a replay. That was just
No. Then we lost all right, the following season.
Look, we digress. It's tea time. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll be back. We'll be doing our recording of our Preston Review episode at 6 o'clock on Saturday evening on all podcast platforms. So you can sit down and listen to it on Sunday morning over breakfast. But thanks for your support and have a good week. And let's hope we get a decent draw. All the best, everyone. Bye now. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye. It's great to see you, Ian. Looking well. What if I've been unlucky? Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red, red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get up, get out of bed, cheer up. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robins are bobbing along. Red, red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin starts bobbing along.